So Dan, I first want to ask you a little bit about Phineas and Ferb and just the fact that you had so many crossover shows and inside references and jokes to so many other pop culture media, how you had this freedom and the ability to do all that, which is really what made that show so smart.
Well, Swampy and I just always wanted to do the show the way we wanted to do it, which was, that's sort of just us pushing to let us do what we want to do. You know, we were told early on that, like, oh, our executive producers do not also do voices. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and how's that working out for you? Does that mean if Seth MacFarlane came over here, you wouldn't let him do any voices? Mm-hmm. And like, maybe that should be a case-by-case thing rather than a complete, you know, like, they were doing business very different back in the old days. And a lot of, you know, we've had a lot of the other shows since then have come up, and the showrunners have thanked us because they hear, oh yeah, you couldn't do this before Phineas and Ferb, but then Dan and Swampy sort of pushed the issue, and we just always, you know, I'm a sort of big loud guy, and I'm not one to follow the rules unnecessarily, and I just always wanted to do the show the way I wanted to do it, and we were lucky that the show is getting viewers and stuff, so that makes those arguments a lot easier on them. And then it's like, well, you know, everybody's watching it, you know. First season we would get notes like, that's a funny joke, but is our audience even going to get that? And I was like, you know, your audience, I don't care, because there's another joke coming for your audience in 5 seconds. As long as this joke isn't bad, so bad that your audience turns the channel, we're playing to the adults in the room. And and that was something that they were a little uncomfortable with at first, but when I explained it like that, they were like, oh, okay. And we didn't get those notes later because 40% of our audience was adults, but you know, yeah. And they were like, oh, we open up a whole new part of our audience if we do that, which I thought was funny because Disney is the one that first started doing cartoons for all ages, and it was weird that I had to like remind them of that, you know. So we just always tried to make ourselves laugh in the writer's room. Whatever made us laugh, we put in, unless it was off color in some way, or you know, like our rule was, if the adults laugh and the kids ask them why they laughed, that can't be an uncomfortable conversation. You know, that can't be them going, oh, well, I, you know, you want them to say, oh, that's because it's a reference to this thing when I was a kid, you know. So that was always our rule that we followed. It was we're not gonna put something that the parents will be embarrassed by.
Yeah. I have to compliment you on the Phineas and Ferb finale. It's really sweet.
Thank you. I was very pleased.
Good. And you had plenty of opportunity to basically, Disney said, or what was the final decision as far as this is how we want to end it, this is how we want to go out?
Well, that was all our decision. Disney had started to soften on, for a while they were just picking up the next season, just you know, like, okay, the show's still going strong. And I think they were thinking at that point that we had like a year worth of shows we hadn't even aired yet, and we're going to wait until the end of that year to see how the ratings are then, and see whether we're going to get another season. In the meantime, we're going to do these 5-hour-long specials. And I was like, okay, that's fine, but if you're starting to soften on it, we've been doing this for a decade. It's okay with us to end it. I'd like to, I would hate to not end it if it's going to end, you know, and it's perfectly okay with us to end it. I'd like to do a finale. And they were like, and then they had like all sorts of meetings about whether that was okay and all that sort of stuff. And they finally came back and said, okay, I think, you know, like we can make a big event out of the finale, and we can, you know, and just as long as you don't kill anybody off, as long as you don't make it so that we can't do the show at some point in the future, we can, you know, look, and I said, well, we'll just end this summer because this has all been about their summer.
Sure.
Let's just do what's the last day of summer for Phineas and Ferb, and that way we can have like we get to say goodbye to the fans, which is something, you know, you never get to do in TV. Like, actually, because of the way we had set up the show, that sort of, there's a lot of meta stuff, there's a lot of sort of references to it being a show, you know, in sort of subtle ways. And to get them to be able to actually sing and dance and do a big number at the end that actually says thank you for watching our show, that was to me like a real privilege. I really enjoyed that. And I can't watch that show without crying myself. I thought I could, but it came on again recently, and I was like, ah, hell, it did it to me again.
And so with Milo Murphy's Law, was Weird Al Yankovic just in your mind immediately from the get-go?
He was not. Ooh. He was not. It was, I literally always thought of the voice as being Noah Jones's voice, because he has this very sort of super positive, optimistic spin on even the worst stuff that's happening to him. And he just has a way of talking that makes that feel unique, not only unique, but genuine. And we auditioned, I don't know, 100, 200 really good actors for this. But it always ended up seeming, and we said, you know, like, there's these bad things that he's talking about, but he's got to be sort of happy and optimistic and just like letting that roll off his back. And no matter what we did, they either sounded apologetic, like nervous about it, or they sounded Pollyanna, like they're covering up some deep inner sadness by saying this sort of thing. And it was, and it literally was, nobody really felt that way naturally. And then we thought about having Noah do the voice. Mm-hmm. And you know, even though he's not an actor, I felt like we could get something good out of him. And I think we could have, but Disney was like, Noah has his own show to run. We cannot spare him for 2 hours a week. You know, it's like we are. You can't use Noah. And I was like, well, if we could find somebody else that, you know, especially if we could find anybody with any kind of marquee value that we thought would work at all, I'll go with it. And then we kept auditioning, and finally, we were sort of done with it, and Swampy's like, we should just make Disney let us use Noah. At one point, I'm like, I don't think they're going to. And somebody, it was Alex on Gravity Falls, had Weird Al in for a voice. Hmm. And I saw a Twitter post that he had put up with him and Weird Al, and I was like, Weird Al. I'd met him a couple times over the years, and I was like, what exactly does he sound like if I look at this picture? And I looked up an interview with him, and I looked at the picture, and I was like, I think that'll work, because Weird Al is just naturally this super positive guy. He's really just, you know, like he looks at the bright side of everything, and it doesn't sound fake when it's coming from him, because that's who he really is. And it's a very sort of subtle performance that he gives, but it was really, really hard to get it from anybody else. And with Al, it was very easy. Just a little adjustments here and there. No, don't laugh after that. It makes it sound this way. You know, just do it a little higher in your register. You know, don't try to put on a cartoon voice. Just do your voice, but a little higher. And it works with this 15 year old boy, you know. And once we saw it with the thing, it was like, how could we not have thought of Al from the beginning? You know, but it was just, he wasn't really on our radar at the time, and just, I was so glad that Alex posted that little video. because we'd probably still be looking. You know, he's and now I just can't imagine, you know, what the show would be like if we hadn't gotten Al. He's so good. Plus, we get to have Weird Al Yankovic sing our theme song. How cool is that? That's really a bucket list kind of thing.
Yeah, that is really nice. And so you've only been on the air a couple of months, but already, based on some of the storyboards you were showing me, an Annie nomination for storyboarding. Yes. How does that make you feel?
Oh, that's really great. To me, the Annies are a great thing, because that's your peers. That's the people who really know what's you know what goes into animation. Emmys, it's a lot of times like it's what is my kid watching, you know, but or where you know it's like or what do I like watching with my kid, you know, and the Annies they look at it with a different criteria and stuff, and so that was great. That was a great thing to see, and I think it just helps you feel like, okay, people are watching it. If people are noticing it enough to nominate it.
Sure. So, final thing I got to ask you: you voiced Doofenshmirtz on Phineas and Ferb.
That was me. When he talked, it was this silly voice that came out of his face.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's unbelievable. And I guess maybe the craziest experience you ever had voicing that character in the booth, something just amazing happened?
There was a lot of fun things where I would, a lot of Doof's lines were improv'd either in the animatic room a lot. I would just, here, give me the microphone, I would do something. But then there's sometimes this, he stutters a lot, and he rambles. He's like, "Well, I think that we should," And then I would have to go in and count how many times I said, "I think that we." You know, it's like I would have to count the stutters and stuff like that, and then I would have to match it later in the booth. There was one time where we got the animation back, and somebody had made a mistake in the camera and had left Doofenshmirtz in this pose with his mouth open, way after he stopped saying Tri-State Area. Until there was like a long pause, and then somebody else said something, and we were calling a retake on it to close his mouth at this point because it was just obviously wrong.
Right.
But then when we got into the booth and I was doing ADR for that section, I just held it out. I said, "The Tri-State Area," and then like I just held it until the other person talked, and then they had him stop, and it made Swampy laugh out loud. He's like, "Oh my God, we have to keep that." So I had to call them and say, "Okay, cancel that retake. Yeah, we're gonna have it the way it is there." So we had bits like that where the voice would match whatever wrong animation we had. But my favorite stuff is like going to Disneyland and seeing people with Perry the Platypus shirts, or you know, a kid, you know, on his dad's shoulders holding a Perry the Platypus doll, and I'd say, "Oh look, it's Perry the Platypus." And the dad would go, "Hey, you do that really well." And I was like, "Yeah, thanks. I've been practicing." Like I had no idea it was me. Wow. that's the good part about voice fame is that people don't recognize you in public. You know, so you can be as famous as you want to be. You can tell somebody, "Oh, by the way, I do the voice," and if you want them to know that, but you know. It's rare that I get recognized, you know, and it's always somebody, some super fan who's seen the behind the scenes stuff and things like that. So,
very cool.
But he was fun. I missed doing Doof, but I'm doing a character on the new show that is sort of the opposite range of my voice, because Doof was way up here like this, and Vinny Ducota's down here like this. So, but it's actually harder on my voice to do Vinny, because doing the lower voice, you can do for a lot less time before it starts hurting.
Wow. So that's fantastic. Thank you, Dan, very much. Thank you.
Absolutely.